It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The bug guy, extension entomologist Donald Lewis, and the plant guy, Richard Giron, will be here to answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. In addition, you'll hear why some cicadas that aren't due to awaken until the year 2014 are now emerging. And what are those little odd growths on tree leaves? Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From buds to bugs, it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and the conversation begins just after the news. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander. We're talking plants and insects with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension Entomologist Donald Lewis. They'll take your questions. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Richard and Donald. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning. Doing fine.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Let's start with something that I was interested in talking about. It's these cicadas that are coming out now. They're not due to awaken until 2014, but they're emerging now. What's the deal with them?
What's the deal is this is the most exciting thing that's likely to happen to me all summer long.
Wonderful.
Just the periodical cicadas by themselves are a fascinating story. And, of course, just a little background. We're talking about the periodical cicadas that have 13 or 17-year lifespans. That is, they have these mass emergences of tens of thousands of cicadas per tree in those limited wooded areas where it still occurs in the eastern half of the United States. And when it always happens in the month of June, they're there for about a period of 4 to 6 weeks, then they disappear, and it's 17 years until they reemerge. Now, that's the story. Mm. This is eastern United States. The last one we had here in Iowa was in 2007. There were just a very few of them over in the far eastern edge of the state. But the big periodical cicada emergence is referred to by the Roman numeral number 3, and it's called brood number 3. And it was here in 1980 when I was a fairly new assistant professor. It reappeared on schedule in 1997 and was found pretty much everywhere from Ledges State Park south and east toward the Des Moines River where it meets the Mississippi River. So if you kind of make that triangle, that's where we saw it. So the western half of the state, the northern half of the state hasn't experienced what we're talking about. Beginning in the year 2000, entomologists and the public in the eastern half of the United States, east of here, began to notice that the cicadas were losing count, that they should wait 17 years before they emerged, but there was a significant number of them that are always early by 4 years. And it's so weird that it's always the same mistake, that if they lose count and they come out early, the early emergence will be 4 years early. Mm. So our brood 3, which was here in 1997 and which should appear in 2014, is emerging now. And this is a phenomenon of this century. Only since the year 2000 have we really been documenting that this has happened, and it's happened almost every year east of here again. I mean, we're talking all the way to the Atlantic Ocean, the Ohio River Valley, through Pennsylvania, Maryland, and so forth, up in New York. It's been happening this century since the year 2000 in the east of us, and now it's happening to us as well. And it's just exciting to see them. Yeah, it's a little disturbing that they didn't wait as long as they were supposed to, but it's great to see them and hear them, and looking forward to spending Memorial Day weekend out looking for them.
That's great. Do you know why they're emerging early?
The theory is weather change. Like so many other things, we really don't have an answer for this one just yet. I'm not a cicada expert. I'm just a cicada lover. Just every time I get a chance, I go out and stand in the woods and listen to them. And but there are people in the eastern half of the United States, especially a scientist in Cincinnati, who makes his life career studying 17-year cicadas. Mm. And he's been documenting this change and believes it is weather change, particularly early in the development of the cicadas, that throws off their count. And so warmer than normal winters is what seems to be triggering this. And we're not talking about the winter just passed. We're talking about the winters of 1998, 99, 2000, when these were little tiny babies after the last emergence.
Wow. All right. So listen for cicadas as you're enjoying the weekend. That, well, it's a buzzy sound that lasts for quite a few minutes and then goes out, moves out, and then it starts over again.
And we're talking about the cicadas that sing in the morning, starting at about 10 o'clock till mid-afternoon. We're not talking about the isolated annual cicadas that everybody will hear in July, sort of in the late afternoon. This is a different cicada.
Okay.
You have to be in a wooded area. It has to be permanently wooded. It has to have been wooded ever since the glaciers receded 12,000 years ago. If the trees were cut down, the cicadas were lost. So you have to get out to those natural areas to find them.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Thanks very much for the update on the 17-year cicadas. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's good.
Okay.
Some people still call these locusts.
That's
a nickname that we can't quite get rid of. It's not an accurate name at all, and all it does is creates a little bit of confusion. Cicada is the official name of these, and those that have these prolonged life cycles are called the periodical cicadas.
Okay. We'll go to callers now on the Horticulture Day program. We'll go to Max in Lehigh. Max, welcome to the program. What's your question for Richard Geron and Donald Lewis today?
I'm trying to eradicate some buckthorn, and wishing it away hasn't worked. So I'm wondering if there's another method.
Where is it growing?
It's growing in a little timbered area I have along the edges, basically, of the timber.
I probably would cut it down and apply Roundup to the cut surface of the stems.
And it's never going to be easy.
No.
All those mature buckthorn trees have, I can't remember if it's 10 zillion or 10 gazillion seeds per plant, but it's...
it's a large number, and the birds love the fruit, so they do their job of dispersing it.
So you've got lots of seeds in the ground as well.
Okay, and is there a particular time of year I should do it?
I would try doing it sometime in the next two or three months. When the shrubs are in full leaf, they're actively growing, so you should have very good herbicide uptake as far as the Roundup, and hopefully that's enough to actually destroy the root system and kill the plant.
And like just spraying it on the plant standing up, that wouldn't be as effective?
You could do it that way too, but I think I would try cutting it down, and then you can apply it directly to the cut surface. And in that situation, oftentimes you can just use the concentrate as is from the container.
Uh-huh.
And if you put it on immediately, you should get very good herbicide uptake.
Okay, I will do that.
Good luck, Max. Thanks for your question.
Yeah, and thanks for the answers.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Rick in Iowa City. Rick, what's your question?
Good morning. I live in one of the neighborhoods that the tornado hit 4 years ago, and we lost a spruce tree. The house was built in 1920. A tree expert has told me the tree was probably 60, 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 2.5 feet across. We left the stump up either for nostalgia or to put a plant on it. But anyway... It's about 20 inches from the foundation. It must have been a volunteer, and they just let it go, and it was beautiful. My problem now is just this spring, I've noticed that I have like a red ant colony starting to work its way into the base of it, and I was wondering if that would be any problem toward the house. Should I just let the ants do their work or go the $200 or $300 it would take to... extract the stump. Its root system is pretty pervasive all through the yard.
I think the answer is saving you $200 to $300. They're going to extract that root for you, that whole stump.
Mm.
Of course, it's going to take them probably the next 3 or 4 decades before that stump completely rots away. Spruce is kind of a tough stump. Red ants doesn't sound like a problem, and they might just be nesting in an existing crack or cavity. Small red ants are usually not a household pest problem. They're pretty much outdoor kinds of species. We frequently find them nesting just shallowly in the ground or under debris on the ground and so forth. So I think this is one where you can live and let live, but maybe keep a close eye on it. The one that people are going to worry about and the one that's going to do you the most good in stump removal are the carpenter ants. The large black carpenter ants will someday move into that stump, but it's going to have to decay significantly before you get carpenter ants that will do a lot of work in terms of digging that out.
Okay, and since it is a spruce, do I have any termite worries?
Oh, probably fewer than you would if it were some softer deciduous trees. But you have termite worries not because of a stump, but because you live in the southern half of Iowa. Your worries are the same as everybody else's. That stump is not going to cause termites. That stump is not going to attract termites. If there are termites in the soil around your property, they're going to find your house sooner or later with or without that stump. So the stump isn't the problem. The stump isn't attractive. The stump isn't going to cause termites. If they're there, they may eat it, but that's also true of the lumber that the carpenters buried when they backfilled your foundation. It's also true of the other wood that's laying on top of the ground since then. So termites happen with or without a stump. I wouldn't spend the money to get rid of the stump for that reason, but maybe you could carve it into a Ronald McDonald. Or wait, that's already been done in Iowa City. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, then I'll just let the ants take care of it, and that's the best news I've had all day. You've just saved me $200 or $300.
Yeah, enjoy the ants while you've got them, and but keep an eye on it. And if they do seem to increase, for a few dollars at the garden center, you can buy an ant spray and treat those cracks and gaps where the ants are coming and going, and slow them down. But you'll never eradicate ants or eliminate them from the property. But you can slow them down for a while.
That won't drive them into the house or anything.
You are not in charge, I think maybe is the way to put this. The ants are going to do what they're going to do, whether you treat them or not. But no, you can't herd them and make them go where you want to go, nor will treating them make them go where you don't want them.
We're going to take a break,
okay,
but
well,
thanks, Rick.
Maybe I'll just name them and call them.
Sounds
pets.
Good. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back in a moment. It's Horticulture Day with Extension entomologist Donald Lewis and Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran. 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in a moment. This is Iowa Public Radio, Talk of Iowa, and it's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, along today with Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Extension Entomologist Donald Lewis. They're answering your questions about the plants and insects in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll go to Roger on the highway. Are you on the highway, Roger?
Yeah,
oh, well,
yeah.
Thanks for hanging in there.
Okay,
that's good.
It does.
Okay, what's your question?
My trimmer is sharpened, and I am ready to go, but I just need a definitive. I've had a couple different opinions on this, and my beautiful lilac bush is done blooming, and it's about 9 feet high, which is too big now. And my question is, when can I trim it back? How far can I trim it back? And if I trim it back too much, am I going to kill it? Or, you know, what's the expectation for blooming again after I trim it back?
Okay. Well, you can prune it immediately after blooming. That's a good time. And as far as pruning, as far as what to do, I wouldn't give it a haircut. By that I mean you have a 9-foot plant. I wouldn't cut it off 6 foot above the ground. What I would do instead is select a few of the biggest stems and cut those off near the ground. And doing that will reduce the height somewhat, but that's the best way of doing it. Giving it a haircut really isn't good for the plant or the shrub. But you want to do it in the next few weeks, and that allows the plant to set flower buds later on this summer on the new growth.
Great, great. So I'll be back next year if I screw this up.
No, you won't screw it up if you do that. You'll be fine. And what you might want to do maybe next year is the same thing. Take out maybe a few of the biggest ones and maybe keep it at a certain size where it doesn't get bigger. If you have a common lilac, they can get to be like 12, 15 feet tall. So
now, this is supposed to, it's at what I was told was its maximum.
Oh, okay.
You know, 8, 9 feet. But now, you know.
Yeah, sometimes the shrubs don't read the information, and they get a little bit bigger than they're supposed to, so.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate, I'll get to it. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Roger. Appreciate the call. We'll go next to Linda in Cedar Rapids. Linda, welcome to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Hi. I have birds that are reseeding my shrubs. I have some mulberry trees that are growing up in some favorite bushes that the hummingbirds love, and I sometimes hang some things out there on my line, and I don't want any mulberry juice on them.
Correct. My mother hated that.
So I wonder, what's the best way to kill those mulberry trees?
Well, again, especially if the mulberry seedlings are growing in a shrub, in a desirable shrub, what I would do is you can't really dig that up, obviously. That's not possible without damaging the other plant. So what I would do, again, is get out my Roundup, and I would cut off the mulberry, and then maybe take a foam-type paintbrush, dip that in the Roundup, and then dab that on the cut surface of the mulberry plant. And
would it be good to, like, chop the top of the part of the tree I cut down and then just make sure that Roundup goes down into the wood?
I would go much lower. Go as close to the ground as you can
right. When
you make that pruning cut of the mulberry.
Right.
Okay.
So maybe you can pull the mulberry seedling out from the shrub, then cut
it
off.
Last year, I cut it off, and it sprouted right back.
Oh, right. It will. If you don't destroy the root system, it's going to re-sprout. So if you just go out there and cut it off, within weeks it comes back. It sends up new shoots. So what you have to do is destroy the root system, and the best way of doing that in this situation would be the Roundup, because you can't really dig it up. So kind of pull it out from the shrub, maybe cut it off near the ground, and then take your foam-type paintbrush, dip it in the Roundup, and then dab it on the cut surface. The tissue at the cut surface should absorb it. It moves down into the root system, and it kills the root system. And once the root system is dead, that's it.
Till the next one sprouts.
Right.
Good luck.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Linda. We appreciate the call. We'll go next to Dave in Des Moines. Dave, hello.
Hi. I have a currant hedge and a number of different kinds of currants there, and I've noticed this year I have a really bad aphid problem on a few of the currants. I was thinking about how to treat them, and then I went out yesterday, and of course there's all kinds of little ladybug larvae, looks like Asian ladybugs. And I'm trying to figure out, do I, you know, let nature take its course and assume that it's going to, you know, that they're going to take care of the problem? I'd rather avoid sprays if possible. You know, I mean, the currents are coming out and everything. But I'm trying to figure out what to do. I don't want to lose the currents, obviously.
Well, I don't think the aphids are going to be the death blow to this particular problem. The currants, the ribes, they have a series of aphids that tend to be disfiguring more than fatal. And it's frequently just the new growth that seems to have the most number of aphids and therefore the most disfigurement, the most deformation. It just looks bad. And one of the ways to approach this is to live and let live. You've got this nice ecosystem going on. You've got a plant that's feeding the aphids, and the aphids are feeding the ladybugs, and the aphids are producing honeydew that's feeding the ants and the wasps and the bees. I mean, you got this whole ecosystem rolling along. You could leave it alone. If you wanted to mess with that, I would do something as the least invasive as possible, and I would probably use insecticidal soap. Buy insecticidal soap at the garden center, mix it up according to label directions, put it in your little hand sprayer. You're going to have to probably prop up the branches, or you're going to have to bend over and shoot upward with the spray, because the insecticidal soap will only kill the aphids it hits. So if the leaves are rolled, or if they're curled, or if they're bent over, you have to figure out how to get the insecticide onto the aphids directly. You can reduce the aphid population that way. It's been a great year for aphids already. If the weather continues to cooperate, there will be more. So you may get a couple chances to do that this year.
But you think it's probably not going to be causing a serious problem for the currants?
I have never noticed it kill the currants. What I do notice is this deformation. Isn't that what's happening?
Absolutely. That's how I noticed it. I saw the ants and the deformed leaves.
And
figured there's probably aphids underneath.
And those leaves are not going to come back. Killing the aphids is not going to cause those leaves to straighten out. The rest of the shrub is going to be unaffected. So if you can tolerate the ugliness of the end terminals, you could live with it. The shrub will.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. And we have an email. We have emails, too, from Carolyn in Neola, Iowa. She says she has a well-established rhubarb patch, consistently has seed stalks. We remove those stalks. But is there anything else we should do to maintain the patch?
Not a great deal. Mainly make sure that you do pull those flower stalks when they appear. You could water periodically during prolonged dry periods. Make sure that you keep the weeds away and things like that. And make sure you end your harvest typically around early to mid-June.
Okay. And we have another email from Wayne in Marshalltown. They have a 40-plus-year-old little leaf linden growing on the 12-inch wide terrace between the street and sidewalk. About 20 years ago, it started losing leaves in late August, with the leaves becoming rust-colored in mid-August. The tree is much smaller in diameter than a younger little leaf linden down the street, but also on the terrace. The tree down the street doesn't lose its leaves. Recently, a tree consultant said that there's a leaf drop going on was related to heavy infestation of aphids, which are attacking the unhealthy tree. Is it possible to control the aphids?
Yes, it's possible. Probably won't make any difference. This is a tree that's probably planted in a space where it's not going to do well. It's never going to do well if it has a limited root zone. There could be other things going on. That's a prime spot to have mower blight, where the bark has been removed. Spraying with insecticidal soap will help reduce the aphid population, but that's not going to change the underlying problem. This is an unhealthy tree. Enjoy it while you've got it.
Okay. We're going to take a 5-minute break, but when we return, Horticulture Day continues with Extension entomologist Donald Lunis and Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. They'll be here to answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. 1-866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and extension entomologist Donald Lewis are here to answer your questions. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Jerry in Cedar Rapids. Jerry, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi, Julie. Got a question about... I've got rhododendrons around the house, and I've noticed again this year, but earlier than normal, little clouds of white flies. And I just don't know whether that's something to be concerned about, or just is that part of the natural environment for them?
Well, clouds of white flies that are White flies? Are they sap feeders that are on the undersides of the leaves?
Well, they're down around the bottom, and they're I haven't really looked that close because they're so small.
Yeah.
And I was out doing a little watering the other day, and they kind of take off and then come back.
Do they take off of the foliage, or do they take off from the soil when you're watering?
Off the foliage.
Off the foliage. Okay. Well, whitefly is something we expect in the second half of the summer, and we've been talking about how things seem a little ahead of schedule this year, but now you're way ahead of schedule if we were expecting them late in the summer. The whitefly, and that's always spelled as one word because it's not really a fly, it's a relative of the aphids. The whiteflies feed as nymphs on the undersides of the foliage, and then they develop into this winged adult stage, which looks like a little white fuzzy moth or a little white gnat. Very vibrant white color, but very small and hard to tell that. I mean, we're talking things less than an eighth of an inch.
Oh, yeah, these are very small.
And when you brush the plant, they tend to fly a little ways, and then they fly right back and land. Treating the undersides of foliage with the insecticidal soap is sort of the standard operating procedure. It's not going to be one and done. You're going to have to make this your hobby about once a week to lay down on the ground next to the plant so you can shoot this insecticide upward. And we're talking about insecticidal soap, so it just doubles as your shower that morning.
Sure.
And shoot upward, and you have to hit the undersides of the plant. This is probably not going to be fatal, but when we start adding bad winter weather, drought stress, white flies, soil disruption, you know, you can start adding these little tiny stresses together and suddenly the bushes don't look so well. But by themselves, the white flies aren't going to kill the bush, although you might get some early defoliation. So I would try to limit the population and see if you can have any luck with the insecticidal soap. You're not going to kill the adult stage, so you're going to have to do your treatment, wait a week, and count the number of little white flies that are coming off the bush when you bump it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got quite a few of them, and I noticed this winter, over winter, I ended up with a little bit more browning of the leaves than normal.
Mm.
So this won't hurt, right?
Mix it according to label directions. You might, we don't think it's going to hurt, but if you're going to worry about it, you treat a little bit of the bush and wait a few days and see. Don't treat with insecticidal soap on a really hot, dry day. Try to do it when conditions are favorable for the plant and the plant is not under stress.
No natural enemies for these.
Well, sure, they have natural enemies, and the natural enemies are eating as fast as they can. They're just not eating fast enough. So that's why you have so many of them. The natural enemies aren't keeping up.
The welcome sign out.
That's right. More ladybugs welcome here.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jerry.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Donald, I've been wanting to ask you about bug sprays that would be good to repel gnats, mosquitoes, and ticks for those of us. I know we've been talking about plants, but I'm just curious if you have a recommendation because some of, you know, there's the commercial brands, there's petroleum oil-based products, there's tea tree oil, there's vanilla, there's all sorts of ideas going around. What do you like to use, or what really repels these little pests?
As the song says, two out of three ain't bad. we can help you with mosquitoes and ticks. Let's get the gnats out of the way first.
Okay.
Gnats really aren't attracted to us as a food source. There are the biting gnats, of course, but that's not what most people usually are talking about. Gnats are going to be the hardest one to repel, and for that, you might as well just buy one of those fans that fits on the top of your head and creates this little airflow to keep them moving away from you. Gnats are going to be the hardest one of those. Mosquitoes, we have lots of commercial choices, and there are lots of home remedies. When you read test results, you'll find that the DEET and the other commercial repellents work very well for periods ranging from 1 to 6 hours. And if you're going to be out for a long period of time, those are probably your most practical choice. When we get into home remedies, everything from vanilla to Skin So Soft lotions and other things that people believe in, it appears that it works for some of the people, some of the time, for a very brief period. And if it works for you, I have no reason to tell you to stop. But if you're looking for something that we know with confidence is going to last for a longer period of time, then you'll probably have better luck with the commercial ones. But if you're only going to garden for 30 minutes after work before you come back in, you don't need a six-hour repellent.
Mm.
And maybe these other things would be fine for you. This is a long way of saying, Julie, the answer is it depends. It depends on what you want. It depends on your expectations. But if you're going to sit by the lake and try to fish for 6 hours at a stretch, you're not going to be happy with the home remedy repellents that you have to reapply every 15 minutes or so. Now, every time I give this answer, somebody says, no, but I use such and such, and it lasts all day. And you always wonder, so how many mosquitoes did you have when you used no repellent at all? Mm. Because some people just aren't as attractive as others of us. If you're going to try to repel ticks, the commercial repellents and the home remedies are not going to do much for you. Campers and hikers know of a product called Permanone, which is an insecticide that you apply to your shoes, your socks, and your pant cuffs. You do not put it on skin. You put it on the clothing down at the ground where the ticks have to crawl up on you, and that works well for those people who have to be out in that situation be out in tick-infested country for long periods of time.
Okay, very good. Thanks much. We'll go to Rod in Garden Grove. Rod, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is about mulberries again.
Hmm.
Only I like my mulberries. I have both white mulberries and the native reds.
Okay.
But I'm having a poor leaf emergence. They're real slow and a lot of dead wood, and I'm wondering if mulberries are having an endemic problem or if there's something I need to be looking at and if I'll help or harm the tree by cutting out dead wood.
Well, if you have dead wood, I would cut it out. It doesn't serve any useful function. You don't have to, but I would. As far as a serious problem, I mean, they have a number of minor problems. They can get like a leaf spot, which can cause spotting of the foliage and leaf drop, and that will weaken the tree somewhat. But normally they tolerate that quite well. And the biggest problem might be something like a wilt, where the leaves on a certain branch might yellow, turn brown, and then fall from that branch. Other branches may be perfectly fine, but it does affect certain branches. So a wilt potentially would be much more fatal in that it could go from branch to branch and eventually kill the tree. Now, if it's some type of wilt, you really can't do anything as far as preventing it or curing it because it's a vascular type problem. The only thing that you can do is basically cut out the dead or dying branches and kind of cross your fingers and kind of hope for the best.
All right.
Does that make sense for you, Rod?
I hear what he's saying, but I'm not seeing any wilt.
Okay.
I'm just seeing, looking out at the mulberry right now, the tips of the branches, almost none of them have any leaves on. The branches are all further internal, and it's pretty spotty, but I'm seeing no yellow or wilting of the leaves that are
okay.
There.
So it's probably not a wilt, but pest-wise, that would be my biggest concern, mm-hmm. that it has some type of wilt. And so this might be more environmental as far as weather conditions, soil conditions, that type of thing, and you probably can't really do much, but just kind of wait and see how the tree responds.
All righty.
All right, Rod. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Ray in Mason City. Ray, welcome to the program. Hello.
I have I believe it's a hydrangea. Isn't that the one with the big white flower?
Well, they do have, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I had one out in front where it's strictly shade. That's a north exposure. Had it for about 5 years, but last year my dog's chain really beat up the outside things, but the stuff in the center, when I put the protection around again, it's blossomed. Mm-hmm. Nothing is coming up this year. Is that because of what she did to it, or is that because of the bed winter?
Well, I'm guessing that maybe it sustained so much damage that it just couldn't survive the winter. Plants that are under big stress going into winter aren't as winter hardy, and a cold winter might be the end of it, just kind of the last straw, so to speak. So it may be kind of a combination of things. So if you see no signs of growth, I think the dog may have caused the initial damage, the severe damage, and it just couldn't survive in that environment.
Combination of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I asked you last year about transplanting peonies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did transplant some. Now, will it take a year or two before they blossom?
It might. At least a year, because it does take time for that plant to recover and build back its food reserves. But if you give it good care this year, the only thing that I'd probably would do at this point would be the rest of this summer, if we have prolonged dry periods, go ahead and water that maybe every 10 days or so. And so if they have ideal growing conditions this year, they hopefully should be able to build up food reserves. And if they have good food reserves, maybe bloom next spring.
Should we feed it anything?
I don't think I would at this point, no. Just make sure that you keep the weeds away and things like that. Keep the competition away and make sure it has ample moisture this summer.
Okay.
Thanks
very much.
Thank you. Good luck. Bye-bye. We've got an email from Kathy, who wants to know a source for getting a praying mantis cocoons to put in her garden to help with insects.
I don't know.
Okay.
I see those advertised every once in a while in odd places. Just to be obsessive compulsive about insect life cycles, which I'm frequently accused of being, the praying mantis does not form a cocoon. The praying mantis has a simple life cycle, egg, nymph, and adult. And when we purchase praying mantids, what we are getting are egg cases. And that egg case that's produced in the fall of the year by the female has anywhere from 150 to 200 eggs in it. And it's this foamy, frothy mass, kind of reminds you of dried insulation that came out of an aerosol can. Mm. If you have a friend who lives south of Ottumwa, they probably can find one on the low-growing shrubs out in their backyard. Maybe they could send one to you. Otherwise, I don't know of any names off the top of my head, but I just know occasionally you see them advertised. One place I would look, not that I know that they have them, but there is a catalog called Gardens Alive, and they sell lots of these organic types of treatments, everything from organic sprays, insecticides, and fungicides. And they do sell some biological controls. They might sell egg cases of the Chinese mantid that she could release.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Ken in Olwine. Ken, thanks for waiting on the line. What's your question?
Yes, I had we planted a weeping cherry tree last spring, and it did very well last summer. This year, it has no buds on it, no leaves, no flowers, no growth of any mm-hmm. kind. I did take my peeled a little bit of bark back, and it seems very green, but nothing's happening. Is it a lost cause, or just
yeah.
give it more time? Or
well, I don't think it's a good situation. The weeping cherries are not very cold hardy, and I'm guessing that we had some very cold temperatures this past winter, and the cold temperatures have damaged or destroyed the tree. So we don't recommend those for Iowa, especially northern Iowa. So I think that's the problem right there, that it really okay. isn't very cold hardy, and it simply couldn't survive temperatures of minus 20, minus 25 or lower.
Okay.
So if you want a tree that has kind of a weeping appearance, if that's what you like, your best choice might be a crabapple. There are a few weeping-type varieties that you can plant that gives you that weeping appearance, but it's a very, very hardy tree. The weeping okay. cherry is not a good choice for northern Iowa.
Okay. Okay, well, we will replace it.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Ken. We appreciate the call. 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. If you have a question for horticulturist, extension horticulturist Richard Giron or extension entomologist Donald Lewis today on Talk of Iowa, it's Horticulture Day. Call in with your questions or email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we do have an email from, from Tom in Vinton. He asks, I have two different grapevines on a six-cane Niffen system. I hope you know what that means. A seedless Concord and a seedless Pink Reliance in their fifth year. We received the May 9th frost in mid-bud break, killing all but a very few of the new buds. The vines have started to produce a few new buds. What steps should be taken to maximize any production from the late buds and for the health of the vines for next year?
Well, you probably can't do a whole lot at this point. On the other hand, most likely they'll grow back, but they may not produce much of a crop this year. So hopefully next year things will be better. The only thing I might do would be to maybe water if we have a prolonged dry period this summer. They do have a deep root system. They are quite drought tolerant, but if we had a really long dry period, going out there and watering might be of some benefit.
Okay. And we mentioned early on in the program that you were going to talk about some abnormal growths or galls on tree leaves that people may be noticing. What's that all about, Richard?
Actually, I'll take that one.
Oh, you'll take that one? It's okay. It has to do with insects then, apparently.
It could be insects.
It does, yes.
Okay.
It could be other things.
Okay.
And grapes are one where people will frequently see these wart-like growths on the leaves. We see things that look like little brown knobs on oak trees. We see these little growths on the bottom sides of hackberry trees and these little red spindles on the tops of maple leaves. All of these are galls, G-A-L-L-S, and these are abnormal growths of the plant tissue that form as the leaf was growing. They don't grow after the leaf is developed. It all happens at the same time. The leaf is emerging from the bud. The cells are differentiating into leaf tissue. But because of the presence of various insects and mites on that tissue, the irritation, the chemical interaction, causes the abnormal growth, that cells that should have turned into flat green leaf turn into a little raised bump on various plants. There's a hackberry nipple gall. There's maple spindle gall. There's maple bladder gall. There are hundreds of galls on oak foliage. And there's one on grapes that's called the grape phylloxera that looks like little erupted warts on the upper side of the leaf. All of these are very common. All of these happen at the time of growth, which means you cannot cure them. You cannot make them go away. You cannot treat and help the plant after this has formed. Oftentimes, this is just a temporary annoyance to the plant. It's an even bigger annoyance to the plant owner. But there's nothing you can do, so you just put up with it. Some leaves fall off prematurely. Sometimes hickories get a gall on the petiole that causes the leaves to fall off. But when you're looking at plants, either admiring them, or more often it's like we've heard about, oh, my plant's not doing well, it seems to be thin. People go out and they inspect very closely, and they see things that have been there all along. And they get concerned about the galls that they find on the foliage or on the stems of their plants. Can't cure them, just love them. Treating ahead of time is not practical. We see these on lots of different plants throughout the summer, and we just have to learn to recognize them and let them go.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that because I've seen this, and I know exactly what you're talking about, so thanks for that information. We'll go to now Jane in northern Iowa. Jane, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I have hydrangeas, and I've had them for about 4, 5, 6 years, and they've been beautiful plants. And this past winter, we had snow, tons of snow before the ground froze, and now my hydrangeas are not doing anything. Is it because the ground did not freeze, and they sit on the north side of the house?
Yeah. When you say they're not doing anything, they're not leafing out? They're not growing at all?
They're not leafing out. They're not doing anything.
Hmm. Actually, the snow should have acted as a blanket and protected the plants. So I'm not sure. Do you have any rabbit damage on those plants as far as...
No.
Gee,
I don't have an answer because the winter actually wasn't that bad as far as many plants were covered with snow. They were perfectly fine. So,
and at least with the old-fashioned hydrangea, that's called Isabel. Is that the one most of us have?
Annabelle.
Sorry, yeah, mm-hmm. Annabelle. I knew Isabel didn't sound quite right. Annabelle hydrangea. The rabbits always prune that one down as low as they can reach, and it comes back from
right,
the roots.
Right. If you have rabbit damage, typically everything above the damage might die, but they typically sprout from the base.
Yeah.
So apparently this plant is stone dead, including the root system. And winter, no, is not responsible for that. I'm not sure what the problem is.
So when I replant, do it now or wait till the fall?
Well, you can replant at this point. Garden centers typically have plants growing in containers, and so basically you can plant now or up till maybe early fall.
Good luck, Jane. We appreciate the call.
Thank
We're
you
out
so
of
much.
Time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Another Horticulture Day is done, but we'll be back next Friday. And I'd like to thank Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Extension Entomologist Donald Lewis. And thanks to those of you who called in and emailed. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. We had technical assistance by Rosalind Sixby. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.